Are you ready for this?
Pop blast! As the Pod Blast goes all man makeover, join us on the Back Sack and Crack Show. KP's back, Mickey Arthur gets the sack, and Shane Watson cracks a century of 111 balls at Worcester. It's the Pod Blast. Don't believe the hype.
So much to talk about, as usual.
As usual. So let's start on that Back Sack and Crack nonsense, shall we?
It's a little blue.
A little blue, but stay with us. KP is back. He scored 177, coming back and playing his first county championship match in 12 years, was it?
Yeah, something like that. 177 for Surrey. He's looking in good nick. He was all ready for playing the second 2020 against New Zealand, but unfortunately that got rained off after just two balls. So perhaps the first topic that we should discuss on the show, Ross, is Michael Lum's two balls.
Michael, or are we going to call it James Treadwell's two balls?
Because that's an interesting
Whose balls were they anyway? Listen, that was a game that could have been played purely in Michael Lum's back garden.
That's a game that we can do some really close analysis
Really close scrutiny.
There were two balls.
First ball was hit for two runs by Michael Lum. What did you think about that?
I thought it was a good shot. I think, from recollection, he tucked it off his legs.
Yes, very nice.
What did you think of the second ball, Ross?
Not very good from Michael's point of view. Listen, I applaud this kind of cricket.
He nibbled at one, didn't he?
He nibbled at one.
The second slip.
I really do think, imagine if that game, Michael Lum had just invited Mitchell McClanahan over for the afternoon. They could have played that whole match. Forget 2020. Let's reduce the game just to two guys, one from each country.
This is the natural conclusion of the gradual trimming of the length of the one-day game.
Absolutely. Those two balls say everything that needed to be said. And afterwards, the two players just shut up and went home. But Treadwell was probably going to have the shortest international career as a captain ever with those two balls, isn't he? That is incredible.
That has to be right.
So KP's only half back. He's only 1 foot through the cat flap, so to speak. That's what everyone's going to be saying next week. Only 1 foot through the cat flap. But who got the sack? It was Mickey Arthur. But what did he do wrong?
Well, in order to understand the state of Australian cricket at the moment, I felt that it was necessary to dive back into the annals of history. And this is a quote from James Sutherland, who's to do with Cricket Australia. Let's listen.
We're really confident that we are making the right decision right now. We are really confident that this Australian cricket team will respond positively under Darren Lehman. They will take responsibility for their performance. And we will see an effort during this Ashes series and going forward that all Australian cricket fans can be very proud of.
Was he crying while he said that and punching a fence?
I'm pretty sure he was weeping and masturbating.
Who is it? What's he do? The James Sutherland?
He's just in Australian cricket. He's just an administrator.
He's just in it.
Anyway, he's very emotional and they're really looking for an effort. I mean, that is really a sign of the depths that Australian cricket seemed to be plumbing about a week ago. I say seem to be, Ross, because actually I've got a bit of a theory that only in the week or so that it's been since that press conference and the replacement
back
of Mickey Arthur and Darren Lehman, they're already bouncing back.
Are they bouncing back?
I just get the impression, perhaps it's their victory against Somerset.
Maybe
a fine victory.
Fine victory.
Their excellent performance today against Worcestershire.
340 for four at stumps.
The mighty Worcestershire.
And we might talk about games gone by between Worcester and Australia later, but they were excellent, really, on the front foot.
Well, crack! Michael Watson! Indeed.
Shane Watson. Yeah, and his brother Michael was there watching. That's not true. 111 balls it took for his 109, and everyone else chipped in too. I mean, it's an all-round excellent batting performance. No one failed, really.
Yes, and then you've got England who maybe unexpectedly jettison Compton.
Mm-hmm. Or is he jettison? Because he's playing at Worcester.
Well,
still
we can
got
discuss
another
that further.
Yeah.
And then you have an England first innings against Essex. There's
good for Bresnan.
So perhaps, listener,
who scored a century, by the way.
I want to come back to that because Bresnan, I'm not going to come back to it. I'm going to deal with it now. This is exactly what shouldn't have happened because England are now going to become increasingly convinced that Bresnan is that guy who can bat and, quote, balance the side.
He balances the side.
Oh, he doesn't balance
like
the side.
Like a fat man sitting in the middle of a seesaw, which is kind of what he is.
So it's really, really upsetting that Bresnan has scored those runs and it'll probably mean that he'll be picked. And that's not a shame necessarily, because Bresnan, good luck to him, but he doesn't balance the side and he can't bat. And that's an old bugbear. It's a pet peeve.
It's a pet peeve. But they've bounced back, the Aussies. But how so?
Well, insofar as we haven't heard any disastrous news for the past 6 days, they've bounced back.
We haven't. But you've got another clip to play for us, Al. What is it?
The memories of before. Let's take a moment to consider what they used to be.
But so much was still at stake in this, the fifth and final test of the series. A clean sweep beckoned to cap off a perfect farewell for three greats of the game. Today, all of that was achieved, and Ken Sutcliffe was at the SCG for the historic win. And Kenny, what a moment.
Well, Kenny, what a moment.
What a moment it was. We were whitewashed that day, were we not?
It was 5-0 down in Australia. We're thinking 06-07. Yeah. Now, the reason I put in that clip is not just to enjoy Australian news, which is kind of funny.
Oh, Kenny. It's like they're doing it in shorts, isn't it? That's what I like.
I can't take it seriously. Is it a problem of mine, but I can't take professionals, and by professionals I mean accountants, lawyers, etc., from Australia seriously. I feel like they ought to be on the beach.
Yeah. Well, they ought, yeah, or in the pub. Just in the pub.
I mean, it's completely unfair of us to think that, but
is it? But is it? It's unfair of us, but having said that, is it?
Thanks, Ross. So that was a clip, and I just put that in there because I like a juxtaposition.
I love a juxtaposition.
Everyone does.
It's my favourite position.
And so what I've done, listener, is I've cleverly juxtaposed Sutherland weeping into his glass and the glory of the newsreaders back then. And the reason I've done that is because maybe there's a recovery, but is it a recovery that's going to get them back to winning ways, Ross?
Yeah.
The first place to start with the analysis, which we're going to embark on now, is a consideration, first of all, of Mickey Arthur, but then of Darren Lehman. So that's the structure.
Mm.
Can I begin with Mickey Arthur, Ross?
You can, I'd love you to.
I would like to begin with you, in fact, but okay, I'll start. Mickey Arthur, apparently a nice guy. Informed player management.
Mm.
That was a load of tosh, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And homework gate. That was a load of tosh.
Yeah.
And South Africa, he was in charge of pretty much the same players they got now, but they never used to win anything.
Mm.
So he was rubbish, wasn't he?
It feels like we're marking his homework, and we've called his parents even, and we've gone, what's this rubbish, Mickey? Look at this. What's this rubbish? Do it again. Mickey Arthur, but he is pretty much the fall guy for a terrible scenario that's been forming around him for quite a long time. I mean, they're in a bad moment, as some sort of Italian football manager might say. They've had a really awful time of it the last sort of year or so. Homework gate is awful. There've been a lot of scandals. They've got a lot of players who, it seems to be the word is, aren't standing up. But will they? Will it galvanise them? Jonathan Agnew can't help saying in his columns in the BBC, well, this might galvanise them. You know, one of them could punch an old lady and Agnew would go, well, this really might galvanise them.
That could do
the
it.
Punching the old, that could really galvanise them. Who knows? It could. They're not a bad side. They've shown Worcester they can absolutely... and Somerset,
oh, they've shown
they can,
Worcester, haven't they?
Haven't they, eh? They can turn over sides when they need to and they can bat... You know, they can. There is that old dominance within them. Those players, Shane Watson, maybe one from the old school, and they've still got those kinds of characters that can really, really put the foot on the throat.
Is
if
there
they
something
want to.
In the Australian psyche, Ross? And I'm thinking of the Lions Test on Saturday morning, which you may or may not have watched. There is something in the Australian sporting psyche that refuses to lose. Unless they absolutely have to. Now, I exclude the Indian tour, in fact, and I would disagree with your analysis insofar as you thought they're in a bad place. You look at Mickey Arthur's record, it's really rather good. They almost beat South Africa in Australia, and they've been doing rather better. That India tour is an anomaly, and to be honest, Indian tours can be an anomaly for lots of sides. Lots of perfectly good sides have done very badly in India.
Mm.
That's what made, actually, England's achievement down in India all the more extraordinary to come back from one down in India.
Mm.
And so I'm not so sure that the writing was on the wall for that reason, with their record. I think there are players standing up, both literally and figuratively. There's just something that we're ignoring, which a lot of sports fans ignore, which is, you know, sometimes countries, just through sheer natural variation, don't have players in their team that are as good as players they used to have.
Yeah,
I mean, it just happens, doesn't it? I mean, isn't this all this looking for reasons, this accountability, these reports, isn't it complete hot air? It's just natural variation of talent, isn't it?
Well, you say that, but we no longer live in a generational game where we wait for one generation to die out for the other to begin.
But why not? I mean, is it crazy, actually, not to do that, not to accept that?
Yeah, it's crazy because India can do it at the drop of a hat. They brought in three or four players, and within 6 months, they'd won the Champions Trophy at a canter, and they've looked like they've got some absolutely fantastic young batsmen.
More on that later, listener.
You can be constantly evolving, and teams should be. You should never be in a situation where you're removing four or five players, or that many are retiring, and you haven't thought to bring the next breed of players through. That is a symptom of bad management and a bad system.
Okay, yeah, I find that fairly persuasive, but maybe, nevertheless, there should be an acceptance in Australia that maybe their players just aren't ever going to be quite as good as that great side. This is the hangover of the great side still.
But it's that attitude. It's that you know, that eagle-eyed attitude.
Well, it's interesting you say about attitude. There's another thing. I mean, if my wife, who's an American, was listening to this, she would classify this as loser talk. And in particular, she was talking to me about Alistair Cook's reaction to England's loss to Sri Lanka.
Yes.
Where Alistair Cook basically said, you know, Sangakkara, and she was like, that won't fly in America.
Go through it again, Al. What did Alistair Cook say?
Well, Alistair Cook basically said, you know, you can play well, but Sangakkara gets 100, he bats the way he bats. You know, sometimes you're just up against a force which is going to play that well, and there's no reason or rhyme or reason. You've just got to accept it. That's sport. Move on. And my wife said, that is insane. The idea of a captain of an England cricket team saying that effectively, just every once in a while, you're just going to lose because you're up against it. Just in America, that would not fly. That's like going into a restaurant in America and saying, I like this Eggs Benedict, but can you do it with pasta with bolognese on top? And being told, that's a spaghetti bolognese, it's something else on the menu, no you can't.
I just think, well, going back to Australia again, I think there's a mixture of psychologies that are going all at once in that side. And in and around the management as well. I mean, you only have to look at the talk that Mickey Arthur made, throwing down the gauntlet and saying that we've got the best attack in the world. I'd say the over-optimistic tactic.
Yeah.
Up against Lehman, who comes in like the green grass of cricket. Some of you will know what I mean if you used to watch Heartbeat on ITV. And saying, look, we've just got to enjoy cricket. We've just got to
have
a laugh.
That was nonsense, wasn't it? Got to enjoy cricket.
We've just got to
this
have
is
a
the
lot
Ashes.
Bit of fun.
It's crazy. Can we say something on Mickey Arthur's behalf? Which is, no matter how bad things have got, he has never stormed into a room and loudly used a racial epithet based on the colour of an entire nation's skin in the way that Darren Lehman has. So no matter how bad Mickey Arthur gets, let's bear in mind that he's not a racist.
Wow, this is strong. This is strong words. I like the fact that I've been waiting for someone to bring the fighting talk, the real fighting talk, to this early Ashes build-up, and I think you've just done it.
I've got a question for you, Ross, because being sort of white and middle class, I find it a little bit inappropriate to sort of call other people out as racist, because I'm never the victim really of racism necessarily, so it's a bit silly. But, you know, with Darren Lehman and that comment back in the day, is the fact that the Sri Lankan team said, it's fine, we've drawn a line under it, he's apologised, move on, does that mean the rest of us should? Or should there be someone standing here right now going, he shouldn't be coach of Australia, he's a racist?
I think you're proposing, and I like where you're going with this, that we stand as a kind of cricketing racial ombudsman throughout time.
The so we're least going, look, qualified ombudsman.
So we're going, look, those boys are being very nice about this. But let me tell you, he shouldn't be allowed to forget that. Look, this is it's a very sticky issue. I think that I think there was a time not so long ago. I really feel like people were really made to pay for the things that they've done in the past. And something has happened. There's been a sea change in sport where there's just become this little unspoken leeway where if people have forgotten about it a bit and it won't be written about too much, then maybe we can forget about it. It's very odd. And what Darren Lehman did will be spoken about over the Ashes. And in a time when they could probably do with a bit of positive press, it wasn't the wisest appointment, was it?
I'm not sure that it was a wise appointment. I'm not sure people like that should be in those positions. I don't know. It's difficult to put yourself there as a judge because you have to be acutely aware of the fact that you are yourself always normally, or so I certainly am, a silly, hypocritical windbag. But nevertheless, Darren Lehman, I'm not sure. And Exhibit B has got to be the England coaching setup of Mushtaq Ahmed and Graham Gooch. And, you know, you've got to look at these things and say, well, has there been accountability? Can we move on? You can only draw a line under something when it's been dealt with properly first, can't you? Or is it up to the people who have been wrong to determine when a line can be drawn? And the Sri Lankan team drew a line under it.
You tuned into the Podblast for cricket and humour, but we give you crisis, soul-searching and middle-class guilt. Salmon butt.
Salmon butt. I mean, we've got to go back to this topic just for a moment with something that's a little bit clearer morally. Or is it Salmon butt has admitted to spot fixing and his part in Pakistan. Ross, your thoughts on this change in his position?
Well, Salmon seems to have taken this opportunity to air and give his motive. He's what we'd call, I think, in the world of literature and maybe the world of entertainment, he's speaking his inners as a character. You know, you can come along, you can go, obviously I feel terrible. You know, it's a long road to recovery. When subtly underneath you're thinking, hopefully I'll be back playing within 2 years, and that'll coincide nicely with a couple of things. What he actually said publicly was, hopefully I'll be playing in the next couple of years, and that'll coincide with a nice few things. You can't actually say that, Salman. You can't talk your inners.
I mean, at least it's probably the only honest thing he's ever said, isn't it? Yeah. Let's just take a moment on Salman Butt. Okay, he ran a trial denying it.
Hang on.
He appealed. Denying it to the Court of Appeal. Yeah. He goes through disciplinary proceedings denying it.
Yeah.
He only stops denying it, actively denying it and lying, when he gets up to the Court of Arbitration of Sport. Mm. And even then he's trying to get his sentence reduced. What he's doing now is so transparently self-serving that it cannot have any value as an apology. Mm. It's insane. And just to remind ourselves about Salmon Butt, this is just over a year ago, really not long ago, June the 22nd, 2012. This is in relation to events in September 2009. But wearing a green polo shirt and jeans, helpful little angel, was very surrounded nice. By a crowd as he made his way out of the airport, having been cleared by Pakistani immigration authorities. So this is after his release from prison. I have no links with spot fixing, nor have I ever entertained any offer. Nothing ever practically happened in a match that was linked to an offer of spot fixing or any fixing. I've never asked anyone to do anything or bowl any no balls. I'm not associated with it. I've apologised to the ICC. I did not report the events in advance because I knew the person. To the Pakistan, to cricketers, to those who support us, I apologise, but for failure to report. So what he's saying is, that is so brazen.
Yeah.
He's saying, oh, I'm sorry I didn't tell anyone because I'd heard about it, but I wasn't involved at all. Mm. And then a year later, okay, maybe I was, but you know, can I come back and play a bit? No, you can't! No, you can't! You're a lying little bugger!
I think he's seen Liar Liar with Jim Carrey, where Jim just sort of, he starts telling the truth because he can't lie. And he just hopes he's going to walk into the court and say, why should we let you off? And he'll say to the judge, because you're a big, fat, red-faced idiot. And he'll get off scot-free. He's gone the other way. He's trying to tell the truth about everything in the hope that these sort of aggressive tactics are going to somehow bring him some sort of recompense.
Are you suggesting that Salmon Butt is actually now acting out the plot of that movie?
Oh,
he's incapable
of
not saying his real thoughts. He's lying in bed with his wife right now and she says, how do I look? And he goes, you've looked better.
That's what he's going for. God bless him. I wish him well.
I don't at all.
Well, it's an experiment.
The only element of Salmon Butt's treatment that is at all in his favour is, as Ed Hawkins has said yet again in his wonderful article for the 150th edition of Wisden, there's no such thing as spot fixing, illegal market spot fixing. But, you know, that doesn't mean he's not morally culpable. Mm. So, Salmon Butt, we've called you out, but maybe with rather more material than our analysis of the Lehman situation. Let it never be said that the Podblast does not wield a moral hammer. Champions Trophy music, Ross.
That's exciting. Does it keep going? Is it?
It does.
Oh, here it goes. It fades
just
now.
Just like the Champions Trophy, it just keeps going.
It keeps going. Now, Al, the Champions Trophy.
We're a little late off the mark with this one, but we feel like maybe time passing has allowed us to step away from the tragedy of England's loss.
Shocked, appalled, devastated. All words used by Mitchell Johnson's hairdresser when he saw what he'd done to Mitch's head, which was then beamed around the world for millions to see the horror of what he'd done. But I also felt very shocked and appalled in a similar way by England's Champions Trophy final exit?
Well, there are a few things that I've come to terms with over the time that's passed since our loss. The first is that I was whipped into a frenzy by De Bel, that it mattered, and that I realise now, quite clearly, now it's over, that it didn't matter at all.
We're like, he is the puppet master, and we are his Thunderbirds 2 and 4.
So I learnt that. Secondly, it's really unsatisfactory to have a 2020 to finish off a 50-over tournament, particularly when your team is effectively your test side, and your 2020 side is completely different. So I don't feel any anger at having lost that game, because I don't really feel like it was a proper win. I mean, the sight of Coley jumping up and down, you know, tensing so hard that his eyebrows were going to spring from his skull, just, I thought, what a complete overreaction. Hand on heart, can those Indian players really... I know they were relieved in the moment because it was a tight game and they needed six off the last ball and there was a release of adrenaline. And I don't begrudge them that. But now looking back, I wonder whether they feel any sense of achievement.
I do have to say, you do sound like a man who cares a bit too much about it.
I do still, don't I? I can't
you said,
cover
you,
it.
You did say it was not a proper win.
We threw it away, Ross.
Listen.
And let's talk about chokers. Did they choke?
Well, I'd say no. And my analysis would be this. It's not a choke if you just happen to throw it away. Not because of apparent pressure, but because you've decided to target an over. And in two balls, you just balloon the ball into fielder's hands. The odds seem to be so far in our favour to me. The win seemed to be in our sails. We got past the difficult bit. We'd even got past the edgy bit where you could call us chokers. And just at the end, just as it's like tripping over the finish line, I felt almost.
A little.
And I really thought we were that close to winning it. But I have to say, the Indians thoroughly deserved it. They were the better team over the tournament. And it was hilarious maybe to see them celebrate so much. But it's probably not so much about that game, but maybe that over,
and particularly the journey.
Yeah.
The journey they've been through, because they're a new side and they're coming together and they prove they can win stuff. Mm. And maybe it was a big statement for them after the 2011 World Cup to do it, you know, without Yuvraj and Tendulkar and Zahir Khan. So, no, I completely agree with you and they deserve to win it. There were two things about the choking issue. First of all, that word is bandied around a lot. Okay. Choking, you have to do it repeatedly. You have to be a choker. to do it once, I'm not sure that counts. There's that golfer who once threw it away right at the end and hit 16 off the last. Maybe that's choking. Mm. I'm not so sure that England are chokers per se or choked. Mm. Secondly, there's nothing choking about a substantive or structural problem being exposed. Like if somebody is normally fantastic and does badly on that day, then that may be choking. But, you know, apart from that one innings in a warm-up against New Zealand, Joss Butler had scored nothing. He'd done nothing the whole tournament. He threw it away. It exposed Bresnan and Broad. Bresnan and Broad should not be going in before Swan or Treadwell in a run chase. Mm. They really are not good. You know, if you think about their equivalents in Ashwin, for example, or even, you know, Southie, these guys that come in rarely down the order, but when they do, they can absolutely smash it. You know, I've never seen Bresnan hit a six, I don't think, in my life. So, you know, it's not choking. They just were never going to be the guys who were going to manage to do that.
I like what you're saying here. You're saying if a structural engineer discovers the structural integrity is not all he thought it was, of a building he's once built, and that said building falls down, that's not the building choking.
No, I mean, it doesn't quite work, that analysis, because I've never really heard of a building choke. I can't think of a situation where a building would choke.
I'd like to see a building choke.
Just earthquake came and it just went, nah.
Nah.
Crumbled.
A building choked.
So that's the Champions Trophy. I still probably care a little too much. And you care a little too little, Ross, if I may say so.
No, I care very much. It hurt. It hurt as much as Holland versus England, the Koeman free kick, for some reason. It brought those feelings back in me.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember that moment. That moment. That moment with Compton. Let's talk about Nick Compton, the Comp Dog Big. He a Nip Compton, the Comp Dog Big.
See, I told you the other day I thought it was muddled thinking by England, because what is the point of getting Compton into the Worcestershire game if you're not going to pick him against Essex? Do you want to pick him? Do you not want to pick him? But you said something different, Ross. Tell them what it is.
I think if you have the luxury of having enough cricket around for the two potential openers to be playing parallelly...
Are they playing off against one another then?
I think they're playing off against one another. With Johnny Barstow as a kind of... stabilizing wheel.
It is. It's like two people dancing in a dancing competition and then just a third person alone
dancing near them
in the spotlight.
Should he be needed? I think that I think it's sound thinking. I must be the only one that thinks that. But I think that Compton is not in good form. But if he can find his way to better form, which there has been an actual arc of him not playing well and then coming back to scoring that excellent 81 against Australia, that's exactly what they needed to do. It's also exactly what they needed to do to get Root back into the side and opening for England, which he's never done before. I think they're playing them off against each other very well.
I am worried that he didn't help himself with his comments, though, about having been dropped or perceived to be dropped. I'm going to read to you his comments now and we can discuss them quickly. I mean, he said a lot, but this is the bit that really jumped out at me. He said that he'd spoken to the selector, Jeff Miller, who'd visited him during a county game, to tell him that he wasn't playing against Essex. And Compton said, he told me at Derby that my performance at Headingley wasn't up to scratch and they thought I'd lost some confidence. I felt that was a bit harsh because it was a new part of the season and sometimes your feet aren't working. And there were a few batsmen light of runs there. New Zealand bowled well, swung it, and sometimes when you're pushing for the decent ball, you come unstuck. But you go through ups and downs, and I wasn't going to throw my toys out. That's really interesting what he said, because effectively what he said is, are you kidding? It's early in the season, the ball's nipping around, I'm opening, and it's not as if I was the only one who wasn't getting any runs. Has he got a point?
Yeah, he probably has. Unfortunately, he was new to the side, and he really wasn't getting any runs. I mean, I don't know whether that's just my view, but he didn't look like them. He looked in bad form. He wasn't moving his feet particularly well. If he wasn't out of form, he was doing a really good impression of the man that was.
I'm not so sure that his comments will help him. He's been a little bit frank. It's classic of a player that's been around for a long time to be able to feel he can speak his mind in that way.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that he has done. I think actually the Compton issue is more interesting because it's symbolic and it's really a division in the minds of a lot of cricket followers. Those who believe that the county game is there to serve England, that players who do very well in the county circuit should be rewarded, and those who think that the England development system is the way forward and that's what's brought England success over the last few years. And it's probably an inane argument, in the sense that it's almost certainly both. But, you know, a player like Joe Root goes in through the system and does very well. He's used as an example. Compton comes through weight of runs at County Championship and doesn't do well. And people are trying to use that as an example. So the Compton argument is political, really, isn't it?
I think there is something in that, and I think that's very well put. But I think the Compton argument begins and ends with the scoring of runs. And that's my personal point of view.
Yeah. But if Compton had been playing in 1995, he wouldn't have been dropped, would he?
So it's an issue about time travel.
If he'd been playing for Australia, he wouldn't have been dropped because he scored the same number of centuries as Shane Watson.
But you can only play what's in front of you, and you can only compete with teammates that are currently playing with you.
Okay. I think, for my own part, I've got to come down one side or the other. Compton is actually, he's being a little bit cute there because it was early season, but those pitches were hardly complete green tops or impossible to play on. They're test match pitches, so they tend to be a little flatter than normal county games. And he's going to be up against Stark. And I've said before, I think he's a walking LBW. His footwork was nowhere. And I don't think he's in the right sort of form or mindset.
Well, let him prove us wrong. Do it, Nick. Now, I wanted to tell you just a little bit about David Leverdale. Now, are you aware of David Leverdale?
Not a thing, Ross.
Al, I think about 16 years ago today, I believe, I think the date-wise, it was 16 years ago, perhaps on Sunday, that I watched David Leverdale off five overs take five wickets for 10 runs against an Aussie side, who later called him... they referred to him as a bowler that couldn't get a bowl in a Chinese buffet. But there he was, David Leverdale, quite good batsman, outstanding fielder and sometime bowler, tearing shreds off Australia at New Road. And I was there to watch it. It was glorious.
Well, as a little like jazz listener, so you probably heard the signs that we're wrapping up. But just want to say quickly that there are all sorts of topics we didn't touch upon that we hope to in the future. First of all, the Surrey fast bowling bowl-off.
Oh,
Done. Edwards, Meeker, the forgotten man of England cricket.
Don't worry, there is good times ahead in the not too distant future for Surrey.
Yes, and we're also, as we're moving towards the close, want to encourage everyone to get in touch at cricketpodblast or get in touch by email at thecricketpodblast@gmail.com. But, listener, I'm afraid we're going to also be taking a short break for the next 3 or 4 weeks, isn't that right, Ross?
Yeah, there'll be a little sojourn because I'm taking some rest time. But don't worry, it's not really that long. More cricket soon.
Tweet us!